So today's lab is on sexual differentiation and genital development. Now, clearly I can't cover all aspects of sexual differentiation. I'll be just covering in great detail the prenatal issues and the actual formation of the structures during the embryonic and fetal period. So the postnatal issues you'll come across later on, in particular in relation to puberty, depending upon how fast we move through it, may talk about some of the postnatal issues as well. Now, this area is extremely important. You're probably aware that clinically and developmentally, this is one of the major areas that we see abnormalities in terms of male hyperspadia, male undercentred testy, and a series of chromosomal abnormalities that lead to disorders of sexual development. And so this area clinically is extremely relevant to you, and certainly postnatally there are issues related to postnatal differentiation, and that is precocious or delayed puberty. So all of these topics will be something that you'll have to revisit time and time again clinically, so it's good to get the story straight right from the beginning. So today's class will work through these links here listed at the top of the page. I'd like to begin with something that interests me, of course, is something genetic and molecular, and then we'll move on to something a bit more descriptive and anatomical as we work through development. So we'll look at sex determination and some issues about the sex chromosomes. We'll look at the early embryo and what features we expect to see in the early embryo, the late embryo, what occurs during the fetal period, and if I haven't dragged the chain too much, I'll talk about postnatal and abnormalities. At the end of today's class, on the quiz link, I'll put up a couple of questions which I think relate to this topic, and you can test to see how much of the content you remember from today. So, as I mentioned in the lecture, the genital system is closely anatomically associated with the urinary system, and while I didn't go through urinary development with you in any detail within the lecture, I will spend a little bit of time talking to you today about it because this will be mainly about the early embryonic period. So most of the early embryonic stuff will be discussing the development of the renal system, and you probably won't have another chance to do renal embryology until postgraduate times or later in your training. So there's only 6 pages to get through today, and if I keep moving quickly, we'll all get away a bit early. The textbooks, this topic's covered in Chapter 12 in Moore and Passade, in the 8th edition, and in Larson's Embryology, Chapter 15. And in both these chapters, they combine genital development with urinary development. So it's often described as the urogenital system. Now, in addition to that, online, I've got specific notes that relate to the genital system. You'd have to, I'll include links as well to the renal development as a separate issue. So let's start out with what makes us what we are, boys or girls. And out of our whole chromosomal complement, these two non-autosomal chromosomes, X and Y down here, make me what I am. I've got a single copy of each one of those, and every girl in this room will have 2 copies of the X chromosome. Now, the original discovery of the region on the Y chromosome important for male sex determination actually came out of clinical studies. And there were a series of developmental abnormalities whereby in early development there was a translocation of a region of the Y chromosome onto the X chromosome. And this translocation of this region containing what we know as the sex determining or testes determining region onto the X chromosome meant that we had a group of patients who are genetically XX, but due to the presence of the SRY gene, appeared to be masculine, or masculinization of the female genitalia. So from this, we were able to establish the region on the Y chromosome critical for determination of sex, and that is differentiation of the genital structures in the male. Now, for a long time, the differentiation of female was thought to be described, and you'll see it still in some of the textbooks, as a default condition. But we now know that there are also a number of genes located on the X chromosome that are critical for normal sexual differentiation in the female. And of course, this not being a genetics class, we're not going to go through the details of what they are, but some examples would be DAX, is the classic one which we talk about. So being female is not a default situation. There are gene expression that's specific to female differentiation as well, but in today's class, you don't need to go through that in any detail. So what is this SRY region? What does it encode? It encodes a little transcription factor, a small protein, 204 amino acids in length, and a transcription factor is a protein which binds specifically to genes and activate them. So SRY turns on the initial step in the program of differentiation of male. And what it actually activates is a whole family of other transcription proteins which go on and activate other proteins. So this is the real genetic regulation of sex initially. So this transcription factor binds to a family, any DNA which recognizes this zinc finger transcription factor. And then this is expressed within the gonadal region or the genital ridge in the male embryo during development, and leads to the differentiation, and this is really an important point, the differentiation of the support cells, not the primordial germ cells, which are the sex cells eventually, not spermatozoa or oocytes. SRY is acting on the other population of cells within the gonad, and that is the support cells, which will, under the influence of this expression, differentiate to form Sertoli cells. And you'll remember from your histology that the Sertoli cells are the other population within the seminiferous tubule. They act as support cells for the differentiation of spermatozoa. So there's the first key understanding, is that this gene acts not on the germ cells, but on the support cells. And once the Sertoli cells have begun to differentiate under this influence, they differentiate the third population of cells we see in the testes. And what's that from the lecture? Leydig. So the Leydig cells, or the interstitial cells, so-called because they lie in the interstices outside of the seminiferous tubule. And so these third population of cells we call the hormone-secreting cells, or the steroid hormone-secreting cells. Now, when they differentiate, after the Sertoli slightly, then their differentiation controls all of the downstream events of internal genital tract development and external genital development in the male. So unless you get that initial step in differentiation, then the whole cascade of events will be perturbed. So you don't get gonad differentiation initially, the internal and external genital tracts will be abnormal as well. Okay. So that's the sex determination issue. And in the males, of course, we've got a single Y chromosome and a single X chromosome. So there's one more issue in relation to sex chromosomes that we have to consider and think about. And that is, in the female, we've got two copies of the X chromosome. And therefore, double the genetic output that we'd normally expect to see in our cells. And so a process that specifically occurs in female, but not in male, is that one of these X chromosomes becomes inactivated. And here is a diploid cell. It's a monkey cell. And in interphase, all the DNA is unraveled, so you can't see any chromosomes. It spreads throughout the nucleus and these dark areas of the nucleoli. And this red spot labelled over here, this is the one X chromosome which has been inactivated. And it's inactivated and taken to one side of the nucleus. And therefore, you've corrected the gene expression level problem by inactivating one of the X chromosomes. And this appears to be a random inactivation event, paternal or maternal, throughout the tissues of the female. So there can potentially be one or the other X chromosome expressed throughout the tissues. And this also later on when you're doing genetics, relates to the penetrance of these X-linked disorders as well, and the fact that males tend to have X-linked disorders like muscular dystrophies and others, which are quite severe, and the alternate X chromosome, if you like, in the female, means that the disorders aren't severe. So I'll just mention a little bit of molecular... Yes?
I'm just wondering, if the inactivation is random, then in that case, how come you don't have a random chance of inactivating the good chromosome? And thus,
you do.
Then why are X-linked disorders so much more common in men?
Yes, so you can imagine an abnormality expressed within a tissue, those abnormal cells tend to be selected out. And so eventually you might get a shift in the proportion of ones expressing from the other X chromosome as well. In terms of germ cell selection, it might be different, but I didn't want to go into that right now. But so any tissue could have one or the other X chromosome randomly expressed through it.
Oh, it's not like,
so not just one. No, it's not, you know, my liver's going to be all that one X chromosome. So the process itself is quite an interesting one, because the inactivation center is located on the X chromosome itself, and it makes a transcript, which is RNA. It doesn't make protein, and what it does is it bundles up that inactive X chromosome and takes it off to one side so none of the genes get transcribed or it's not active. So that's the inactivation process that's going on. And in fact, postnatally, in a pathology lab, if you get a blood cells from any patient without seeing them at all, if you look on white blood cells, you can identify on the periphery of the nucleus a small structure. What's this structure I'm talking about? The bar body. So the bar body represents the inactive X chromosome that's being pushed to the periphery in the female. So in a blood smear, if there's a bar body there, it has to have come from a female blood, not a male. So there are two major issues in relation to gene dosage and SRY. Now, what about these primordial germ cells, the ones that are going to form the oocytes and the spermatozoa? It appears that these population of cells are put aside very early in development. In the second to third week of development, the primordial germ cells from the animal model studies appear to be the first cells to migrate through the primitive streak. So during the process of gastrulation, conversion of the epiblast into the trilaminar embryo, then the primordial germ cells are the first ones to dive through that primitive streak and be put aside as a unique population of cells. Later in development, when the embryo has begun to fold up, then these germ cells can be seen located in this region here. So this is the whole human embryo in a stage 9 embryo, that's been folded up. This is the yolk sac here ventrally, the brain fold, and the endoderm of the foregut, midgut, and hindgut would run down here. And this region that I've highlighted in green, the junctional region between the hindgut and the yolk sac, is thought to be the site of where the primordial germ cells sit and wait. And they're sitting and waiting because there is no place for them to go yet. There's no genital ridge, there's no gonad, there's no structure there, and in fact it's the fourth to fifth week that the cells will actually migrate out of this region into the genital ridge, which is now formed. So these are our germ cells, our primordial germ cells, the undifferentiated stem cells. And just to demonstrate quite clearly that they're not acted upon, this last image on the first page here shows you the Sertoli cells, labelled in red, with a marker for one of the downstream events of SRY activation, which is the expression of fibroblast growth factor 9. When this gene's turned on by SRY, then we can detect that protein. And what you can see is that it's only found in the support cells. Another marker which specifically labels germ cells, PCAM, which labels the germ cells and the blood vessels out here, you can see that the germ cells have no expression of that marker which has been turned on by SRY. So we're not getting an activation of that process within the primordial germ cells. I'll stop there and give you a chance just to look through this initial stuff. and flick through the classes, and then I'll go to the next page about the early embryo.